That was too loud. Testing 1, 2, 3. All right, we're good to go. All right. Yes, please be seated. So, and thank you for not immediately leaving after the Lord's Supper. Sometimes you never know who's going to be in the audience. But many years ago, I was preaching at a small church in Jacksonville, Alabama. And there were only 8 people in the church. And so I said, please don't leave after the Lord's Supper. There's nobody, there's not going to be anybody left. So anyway, we appreciate you. A lot of new faces for me. I don't really know many of you. I know Steve, met him several years ago. It's a great joy and honor for me to be here and to spend a few moments with you this morning. And so we'll take a look at a few things regarding my parents and their life and their story. And we'll look at some scripture and try to draw some things out of scripture for us this morning. You probably know that my dad is Wayne, and I got the taller gene in the family. But he's been gradually shrinking as the years go on. So I know my destiny in life. So every year when I, in the Navy, when I go to height and weight and that stuff, I try to push my height a little bit higher because I know one day I'm going to get shorter. But as an older person, you can probably get away with a lot more stuff when you're short. So maybe it's a blessing to be shorter when you're older. My dad vividly remember the last time that I was spanked. I was 16 years old, and he probably doesn't remember that, but I've kept it in a logbook in my house for many years, and I thought the most appropriate time to confront him would be right now. So I was 16, and I had painted my room another color, and as you know, he told me to assume the position. We all know what that means, right? And so I hadn't been spanked in a long time. And so I really thought, oh my goodness, this is going to really hurt. But he did one of those spankings where he really paused before he gave me the spanking. And so it just built up all this intensity. And anyway, he gave me a really light spanking. It hurt my pride more than anything else, really, is what it hurt. And so anyway, he used to tell me all those years ago, he said, when you get to your own house, you can paint your room whatever color you want. And so many of you know that they're coming to live with us. So, you know, Dad, not only am I going to paint my own room, my own color, but I might come into your own room and paint your own room a different color. So, yeah. When you're your own man, you have your own house. You can but we certainly appreciate my wife and I. She's not here, work and all that. My son is here with me, so I appreciate him holding back the tears as Daddy's up here. But we certainly appreciate the positive encouragement you all have given to my dad these last 8 years that he's been here. It's certainly been a positive moment for him. 8 years is a long time, but it's certainly been a positive experience for him and my mother, and they've certainly enjoyed sharing in the gospel with you. So this is a special moment for him and for us as our family, for kind of his last official time here in this role as a full-time minister. So I just want to do 2 things with you this morning. Just want to share with you in thankfulness for some of those years that he had served, and just kind of piece together and highlight some things that stand out, and remember some specific moments that really made the difference between spiritual life and spiritual death. We have the tendency to overlook the things that we do in life and to minimize the sins or the mistakes that we often make. And many of the decisions that we make from time to time, whether good or bad, they all have their consequences. And sometimes those decisions really do make the difference between spiritual life and spiritual death. And so I'd like to think about some of those things with you this morning. There's a very well-known preacher that died several years ago, and he was well-known for having said that Jesus did not come into the world to make bad men good. Jesus came into the world to make dead men alive. And that is certainly the truth for my parents. all those many years ago, they were not seeking to go to church simply to improve their lives or to join a social club or to add some weekly Bible study to their family time. They were genuinely seeking for the truth. Their hearts were pure and they were tender, and they were able to be touched and molded by the truth of God's word when presented plainly to them. And you've perhaps heard my dad in his lessons often say the truth, or those that are seeking for the truth. That's always been in the back of his mind. Shortly after they were converted, they would go to the church there in Richmond, Kentucky, and the brethren that had prayed earnestly for those that were seeking the truth prayed with my parents as well. And as my parents heard that phrase, "Please bless those that are seeking the truth," they thought to themselves, that was us just a short few months ago. And so they realized through the prayers of those faithful brethren and the providence of God, they found the truth. When they found the treasure, this pearl of great price, they realized the value of that treasure, and they took hold of it, and they didn't let it go. And for me and my sisters, one of which is here today, the other two are still here, but not with us, we're eternally grateful for that decision that my parents made many years ago to follow God through a faithful obedience to his word. We're probably all familiar with the statement that Solomon made in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, that God placed eternity in the heart of man. And my parents, they felt the pull, they felt the tug of eternity in their hearts, and they began to search for God and the truth. 38 years in total, my dad spent preaching and serving the church. And just list a couple of, actually I'll go ahead and list them all. For a couple of years too, I think. He was in a small church in Cobb Hill, Kentucky. From there, he moved to Springfield, Missouri and preached for about 2 years. From then, he moved to Washington, New Jersey and preached at a small church there for 11 years. That's where me and my older sister grew up. And then in Richmond, Kentucky for 11 years. After that, he moved to New Mexico. We always get that one confused. Now, Las Vegas, New Mexico. And then his last 8 years have been here. We often overlook the idea of God's providence. And when we think about that, we as Christians in the Lord's church, I think it's so easy for us from time to time to minimize the providence of God. Many years ago, there was a man that had sold a piece of toast that he had popped out of his toaster that bore a similar image to the face of Jesus, and he posted that on eBay for $25,000. And when we as Christians in the Lord's church, we think about the providence of God and we hear stories like that, we're almost hesitant to think about the reality that God actually works in our lives. And if God does not work providentially, whether through his general providence or his specific providence, then what in the world is the point of prayer? We're told to pray without doubting and with full assurance and with full faith that God places people in our lives at certain places and at certain times, something that only God can do. And he knows our hearts, and he knows who is able to help us in those moments when we're seeking for the truth. Doesn't always mean that a piece of toast means something between life and death, but it certainly means that we can search for God and we can know with confidence that he is seeking for us. The verse that we read, was read just a moment ago, tells us very plainly that God himself is seeking for those that are seeking for him. And the reality is that he's not far from each one of us. As we're told in Peter that one day the heavens will be opened and this earth will be burned up, some theologians have suggested that it's almost like you're on a great stage and the curtains are drawn back and you see for a moment that God has actually been working here and doing things behind the scenes, and we haven't even realized it. And so I want to share with you a few details of when my parents came to the Lord, and you'll see very easily the providence of God in their life. I would say probably any one of us sitting here in this room can speak to a moment when we know for sure that God has been providentially in our lives in some way or another. My mother, this was in the early 1980s, was attending a Church of God. And I believe it's had some kind of Pentecostal influence. But she would also read the local newspaper. And I asked her about this yesterday. I said, "Mom, what did you use for media?" And she said, "The newspaper. That's what we use." And of course, we're all used to our phones today. We find everything through the phone. But there was a preacher named Rod Boston, originally from Fort Ord, California, and he was preaching in Richmond Church of Christ there in Richmond, Kentucky. And he had set up a dial a Bible moment. And probably none of you have a hardwired phone in your house, but that's what they would use, the dial a Bible moment, and Rod Boston would record a couple of minutes, read a couple of verses, and give a Bible message. And so her and my dad would listen for several months to this wise little man, Rod, who would give these little 2 to 3 minute Bible moment messages. You call in and you hear the message. And one night, as she had gone to this other church, a Church of God, the preacher said, "Go look at these other churches and you'll see that God is not there." And my mother took that as a challenge, and she said, "Well, I will do just that." So she thought, you know, I'm going to see about this dial a Bible moment. And so she got in touch with them. They were having a gospel meeting. She goes in the building, and Rod and Joyce, they come up, and they greet her, and they ask her for a Bible study. And she was blown away. She had no idea that this person that was doing these Bible moments would want to have a personal Bible study with her. And at that time, my dad was playing music. You're probably all aware. He was a drummer many years ago. He was playing in the nightclub, living his dreams. And my mother was having these weekly Bible studies with Rod Boston. And one night, my dad came home to get his guitar, and Rod seized the opportunity and got my dad to agree to a Bible study. And after about 2 weeks, two Bible studies roughly, my father was baptized. What kind of a person gives up everything, their source of income, their stability, their dreams, to live the meager and often unappreciated life of a preacher? After just two Bible studies? Jesus said, "If anyone wants to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." And you've probably heard that sentiment in many of his lessons, the lesson of self-denial. "For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Jesus also tells the parable of the kingdom being like a hidden treasure in a field. And then when it's found, they give up everything that they have to find it. And it's here where we need to pause for a moment and reflect on the story of Abraham. God called Abraham to a new kind of life that was much different than the life in which he had grown up. When we read the story of the parents of Abraham at the end of Joshua, we read that Abraham's father was an idolater. And so God called Abraham to live a life of adventure. We don't often think of it that way. But it's the same life of adventure that he called my father to many years ago. Called him to leave his father's house and to live as a true human. The name Adam that God gives to Adam when Adam is created in Hebrew means humanity. And as these image bearers that God has made, us humans, it's often ironic that we often excuse our behavior by saying, I'm only human. But if we reverse that thinking and we say to ourselves, you know what? I'm a human. I'm made in the image of God. I should not be behaving that way. I should not be living that way. And so God calls Abraham to live as a true image bearer of himself, as God truly intended for man to live. And boy, was that the adventure of Abraham's lifetime. He left his house, his father's house, at the age of 75, and he went to a foreign land, and he lived as a stranger and a sojourner in a foreign land. Not only did God ask Abraham to leave his father's house, but we see in this story of Abraham the most deep and the most foundational story of personal sacrifice. God asked Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, something that many of the ancient Canaanite groups would have done. And so it would have been a surprising thing for God to ask Abraham to sacrifice this son that he had waited so long for. But God did not ask Abraham to sacrifice Isaac when he was a baby. God pushed the envelope of testing a little bit further. He waited until Abraham had a relationship with his son Isaac. Did you ever think of that? That as Abraham is going to this Mount Moriah, this hill, to sacrifice his son, and his own son walks along and says, Dad, where's the offering for the sacrifice? And Abraham looks at his son, and he says, the Lord will provide. And it was on that same hill, 2,000 years later, that God provided his own sacrifice. And it's this father-son relationship that God chose from Abraham and Isaac to be the model for which he himself would come and present his own sacrifice through his son. And so this story is not only about Abraham, but it's also about the faithful son Isaac that follows his father obediently up to the altar and lays himself down on the altar without questioning the will of the Father, just as was wonderfully presented to us in the Lord's Supper through obedience, that Isaac lays down and accepts the fate that his father has given to him. And we know at that moment that God called Abraham. He said, now I know that you fear God. And what God called Abraham to do was give up that which he loved the most. It's this point of self-denial that came across so clearly to me as I was growing up in my father's preaching. And the only reason that he asked others to deny themselves was that he himself first denied himself of that which he truly loved, just as Abraham denied himself of his son, which he truly loved. So my father also sacrificed himself for that which he truly loved. We often so easily blame God when life is taken or we experience tragedy and suffering in life, but we often forget that it was God that placed on the day of judgment himself on the altar. And he placed the day of judgment only after he himself first came to taste what it was like to have sin and death upon himself. If death is the inescapable consequence of the sin that affects all of us, then the day of resurrection will be the ultimate day in which God restores back to us in the most fullest and complete sense what we are truly waiting for as humans. I just want to share with you a couple of things that I misunderstood about my father as I was growing up. As a young person, you think you're a lot smarter than your parents. And for a while, you actually are, until you realize that you're not. And growing up, the older that I got, the more that I realized, and I thought that my father just had this sense of negativity in his preaching. And I would often say to him, "Why this negative preaching, Dad? Why do you always got to be so negative about everything?" And I didn't know that as a preacher, all of these harsh realities that sometimes he had to face. I remember many years ago, we had just recently moved to Kentucky. And there was a young college boy that would come and attend services. We'd have to pick him up and take him to church with us. He was a wonderful young man. And one weekend, his dad was going to get a haircut. His parents lived in Alabama. He was crushed by a piece of equipment that rolled off a construction machine, and he died. And his mother called my dad, and asked us to go tell this young man that his father had died. And my sister and I, we sat in the car as my dad was standing there giving me a hug. This young man who just lost his father, crying and screaming. And it was a painful thing for me and my sister to sit and listen to. You can't go through things like that in life and not be affected personally and not have those things come out when you preach and teach about the reality and the sufferings of life. Another story, there was a young man that had gotten a car accident, and my dad and several other preachers had gone to see him that night, and he was on life support, and it was a really bad situation. And his father was a preacher in a nearby church. And I remember after that incident, I remember one of the next lessons that my father gave was what really matters in life. And boy, you talk about a negative lesson, but one that hits reality. And you really think about what's important. And I remember there was a Christian, or a man there, a husband. He'd sat next to his wife for years. He'd never been baptized. And sometime after that, he was baptized, after that lesson. And you think and you wonder, what's the impact of those kind of things? Solomon tells us, it's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. Because Solomon knows that when we go to the house of feasting, we don't think about these hard realities and the suffering of life. It's only when we go to the house of mourning that we sit up straight and we think hard about the difficulties and about the end of our life. And I'm sure you heard many of those lessons from him. My father also had a unique ability to simplify things. And that is something, a skill that has helped me many times in life. It seemed to come naturally to him. But he would often say, you have two choices. You can either jump all in or quit. And you know, sometimes our lives are so complicated that the simplest answer is often the best. And this helped me as I would navigate different parts of my life. There are certain things that he treasured. He treasured time with his children. He gave up his career, but he gained his family. Remember, many years ago, he traveled to China and spent several months preaching and teaching over there. And he always valued the relationship that he had with those Christians, those young Christians that would often refer to him as their spiritual father. And one story he often told us is how these young Christians would walk in the street and hold his hand. And as Americans, it's like, okay, you know, step away, like, don't touch me. But it was so precious and so special to him, those moments. He also benefited greatly, I think, from the meetup studies that were done here. And I think perhaps some of you had a part in that, a big part in that. And my mom often told me about many of those studies that were done right here in Champaign. And what a wonderful blessing that has been to many of you here. When we lived in New Jersey, after we had left, there were a couple of families that had really thought about moving with us and changing their homes and coming so that they could continue to hear him preach the gospel. And I used to think to myself, what in the world are they thinking? They're giving up their families and their homes and their jobs. They had seen something in the conviction of him, something so sincere and something so courageous that they were willing to change their life because he changed theirs. He honored the small things in life. And I'm sure you've heard his lesson about the last things in life. There's a lot of rich lessons we can draw from that. I remember as a kid, the first time that we had moved to New Jersey, I think one of our first nights there, our car was egged. We had this little old Chevy Spectrum, I think was a little hatchback. We were all doomed every day to get in this little tiny hatchback car. And our car was egged as soon as we got there. And my dad went out running and chasing after these young neighborhood boys that had egged the car. And I thought he was like Captain America or something, you know, going chasing down these boys. And the kid's mom really appreciated the fact that someone confronted them. And she said, you know what, I'm going to make them pay. And they need to learn that lesson. But he had the courage to stand up and care about those small things that someone might have easily passed away, but he cared to make sure they were corrected. One of my weirdest memories, we used to go to Blockbuster. Anybody know what Blockbuster is? You probably don't. You might have heard of it, but we used to go to Blockbuster on the way home from church, and my sisters would go off and find their movie. I'd find my movie, and my dad would say, all right, you want to get a movie, you got to bring it to me first. I said, all right. So I come up to him and have this movie here. I say, Dad, here, can I get this one? And he'd stand up like this and say, all right, you want to see this movie, right? Like, yeah, that one. He'd say, all right, rated PG-13 for sexual violence. You want to see that? No, Dad, I'm fine. Rated for this and for that. And all right, Dad, I don't want to see it anymore. I'm good. And he cared enough about our purity to do something about it. And there's a lot that we can learn from that. He also honored the marginalized in society. I remember when I was in middle school, there was this elderly lady. She couldn't walk. She could barely walk to her bathroom. She was bedridden from arthritis. And we used to go from time to time and sit in her smelly apartment. And as a teenager, I thought, what am I doing here? I've got other things, more important things in life. And it wasn't until many years later that I remembered her smile. And she would often say, I'm so glad that you came to see me. Jesus said on the day of judgment, when you visited the poor and the sick, you came and you did those to me. Jesus also said, when you have a feast, do not invite the rich who can repay you. Invite the poor and the blind, those who cannot repay you. And then your reward in the kingdom of heaven will be great. These are many things that I remember from my Father's service, that He made us go as young children to see the poor and the lame and the blind. And He saw it not as a waste of our time, but as an investment in the kingdom of heaven. And one thing I will ask you as we leave is to give Him a word of encouragement. He always referred to Himself as a no-name preacher. And I always hated that He did that. There are certainly preachers that we have that are our favorite preacher, someone that we like more than another. But I only care that He knows that I love Him. And on the day of judgment, I will remember His name. And I'm sure many of you will know His name as well. And it's true that 100, 1,000 years from now, no one will know my name. But on the day of judgment, that will be something different. So I ask that you give Him a kind word of appreciation for the value of His service and the preaching and the teaching that He has done and the impact that He has made on your life. So I'd like to close by asking about you. That's my Father. But what about you? Ultimately, all of that we have said and covered this morning is not simply a reflection of me or my Father or our family. It's a reflection, as Paul says, of Christ living in me. We love others because Jesus loved us first, and He gave Himself first in self-denial for our benefit. Maybe this message of self-denial means that you, or as a father or mother, should devote a little bit more time every week to your children or to studying the Bible. My wife and I, we really have a difficult time going to church on Sunday evenings now that we have two children. And most of you that have three or four children, you're probably laughing at us having only two children. And it's difficult to go on Sunday evening. And when I think about, man, it's been a long weekend. I don't want to go a second time, get the kids in the car and all that stuff. I remember the family in New Jersey that was converted because their next door neighbor had five children. And year in, year out, they were going to church. And because of that example of faithfulness, they were converted to Christ. In the law of Moses, there are 613 laws. 613. Thou shalt and thou shalt not. Jesus reduced that down to two laws, which are both laws of self-denial. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. In essence, to love God more than you love yourself. And the second is like to it, to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And perhaps this lesson of self-denial means that maybe you spend less time on your weekly projects and take a few moments to sign up for a meetup class and invite people that might be just like my parents, searching for the truth. Many years ago, I was attending a gospel meeting, and there was a preacher that had done a great job, and at the very end, he said, I want you to think of five people that you know and see if you can reach out this week to five people. And I thought, you know, that's a great idea. But then I thought to myself, what about just one person? just like Rod Boston, took a few moments to ask for a Bible study with my mother, what about that one person? What would eternity mean to that one person, to that one soul that was saved? It would mean everything. And perhaps you could even help save a generation. My father had no idea of the eternal impact he made on me and my sisters many years ago. So I hope you will join me in wishing him a farewell and a word of encouragement as he enters another chapter of his life. We will hopefully have a few projects for him, but I just want to thank you for being a positive source of encouragement for him and for his final years serving in the Lord's church. I wish you God's greatest blessings as you continue to search for another preacher, but don't search too hard because I might send him back here. So. We'll go ahead and stand and sing a song of invitation. If you're subject to the gospel, we'd be happy to baptize you into Christ Jesus this morning. Would you stand and sing with us?